Yeah, so as Bill said, I'm not sure, Hanane, sorry for disappointment. I will try to tell you about Maxima data analysis and... It looks okay. I just wanted to be polite and invert for you on the projector. That will be an overview. I wrote this title and then I realized that I really cannot even list what we've done for past almost 2 years. You know, there was a group of 12 people, including theorists or data analysts and experimentalists working on Maxima data, on understanding what's in Maxima data and or systematic problems. So that will be a personal selected biased overview or personally biased overview. I will not show you the view graph with Maxima collaboration because Adrian just did that. So basically, I will tell you what I'm going to tell here to be more complementary to what Adrian said and what Andrew Jaffe is going to tell us today. So Andrew and Adrian, they deservedly so, they got the tasty pieces. So they are talking about power spectrum and cross-regard parameters. I will try to say something how we dealt with the data between time-ordered time stream and map making. So it will be quite technical. I hope to give you some information, extra information about what we've done. That's basically supposed to be a content of the paper, which we are in the process of writing, and data analysis paper related to Maxima. So I will finish my talk probably with that view graph, so just in case I'm showing you. This is our Wiener filter map, and this is a map before Wiener filtering. This is 5 arc minutes resolution. Pixel size is 5 arc minutes on the right-hand side. So you can see that Wiener filtering doesn't lie here very much. We see what the same structure in both maps. So let me start from describing Maxima data set from the point of view of data analysts. So this is how we get Maxima data set from the experimentalist. So it's calibrated and it's, everything is perfect. We don't get data for 16 photometers. This is how many photometers is on Maxima. We have also 3 noise streams. So this is 3 photometers which they basically trace only electronic noise and eventual electronic problems, which are obtained for 3 dark channels. The data so far were reported only for 4 photometers, the CMB data, which are 3 150 gigahertz channels and 1 240. This is just to keep in mind. Each of those 16 time streams is divided into, first of all, it contains around 2 million measurements, which they are broken up into 2 sets corresponding to 2 scans, as Adrian was pointing out. We call them CMB1 and CMB2. They were performed at different altitudes, and the distance in time, or the difference in time was between them was 1.5 hours. So basically they should see different, for example, atmosphere. Each of those scans, on the other hand, is composed of 10 chunks, each of them containing around 50,000 to 250,000 time samples. We assume that those chunks are uncorrelated. The patches of the time stream between them are long enough to validate this assumption. The way the chunks were broken, the scan time streams were broken into chunks. That was basically based on the assumption of time stream stationarity. I will comment on that soon. So when projected on the sky, Maxima 1 data, which are used currently in the analysis, so this is a bit less than what Adrian was showing, is on the chunks which overlap well with the other chunks are only included in the data analysis, so this is 16% less than the part of the sky Adrian was showing. This is CMB1, this is CMB2. They, as Adrian pointed out, they cross-link very well in the middle. So let's have a look at the Maxima time stream. This is one of our longer chunks. It looks very nice. We see those spikes which correspond to cosmic rays. it looks very stable. It's very noisy, but it looks very stable. It's the width of the patch doesn't change with time, which means it's very very stationary. The RMS is given up there. We can check for non-Gaussianity or some strange effects present in the time stream, and we can, for example, bin the data to histogram, and the histograms of the look like that. So the red curve is the Gaussian fit. We see that up to 4 sigma away from the mean value, which is zero, we are perfectly Gaussian. We see some rise in the ends here, which is not a presumably not a non-Gaussianity, but the presence of the correlations in the time stream. So whenever you have a very rare event, which happens when you have so many time samples as we have here, it's likely to be positively correlated because of correlations in the time stream and drags the tails up. I will talk about that a bit later. This is the part I left it out. It's I get time stream already with bad parts flagged out. But I believe that that's blind. So we try to model our time stream, and for the theoretical point of view, the model of the time stream looks like this. So this is our time stream measurement at the given time t. This is the part which is sky part. So this is map, which is pixelized, and t is the number of the pixel. ATP is a pointing matrix telling us at what part of this map we look at time t. Apart of that, we have this noise and t, which we assume hereafter is stationary and Gaussian. I was showing you that the stationarity is well achieved. I mean, it's well preserved across the chunk, and also the Gaussianity seems to be well fulfilled. Assumption about Gaussianity of the time stream seems to be well fulfilled. We have two extra contributions here. One is the primary mirror synchronous, or we call it chopper synchronous signal, which is denoted in this funny way here. I'll just explain that. And the other thing is that because each of the chunk is treated separately in principle, and for example, the offsets of each of the chunks are subtracted separately, we lose information about relative offsets. So we need to introduce extra degree of freedom to modeling our time stream. This, the matrix BTQ here, it basically tells us what's the contribution of the chopper at the given position, at the given chopper position Q to the time stream, or the chopper synchronous noise to the time stream. And this is our discretized chopper signal, which we are recovering together with the full map and also with the offsets which are hidden in this vector YR. And this is very nice notation because it allows us to recast the entire the expression for the time stream in the standard way, where we have something pointing matrix, we have something map, which now includes not only real map of the temperature of the sky, but also those extra degrees of freedom coming from the chopper, and extra degrees of freedom coming from the free offsets between chunks. The noise stays as it used to be. We know how to solve that, and we know how algebraically the expression for the map looks like. The only problem which is still here is the problem of those discontinuities which are present in the time stream, which in principle it's not a problem for the map making per se. We can still, the formulas for map making are analogous to those derived long time ago by many people, and they look like this. So this is our map, where that map still includes those extra pixels corresponding to chopper and offset between chunks, and this is the corresponding noise correlation matrix. If the noise is Gaussian, as we were assuming, then not only this is a full description of the map of the CMB map, but also it's easy to get rid of those extra degrees of freedom by simply cutting those extra pixels added to the map and to the noise correlation matrix, and that procedure corresponds to marginalization. However, before we marginalization. As I mentioned, there is no any requirement about time stream continuity in those equations. However, it would be nice if we could express the gaps or include the gaps within the same framework as those extra degrees of freedom corresponding to chopper and offsets. However, to do that, we need to perform some manipulation of the time stream, and we call it simultaneous noise estimation and time stream processing, where we estimate the noise from the independent chunks, from the independent subchunks of the full chunk, and at the same time we fill the gaps with the constellation of the noise. In such a way, the signal in the gaps, the continuity of the time stream is preserved, and the signal in the gaps is replaced with the noise realization in the way that it does not compromise the correlations in the noise correlations in the time stream. That is a nice trick which I will try to argue in the future is actually crucial for the feasibility of our map making methods and makes map making basically possible. What happens is we don't only restore time stream continuity by filling gaps with those constellations, but also our noise correlation matrix is called tetris in this case, which means that all the elements on the diagonal, and I mean the main diagonal and all other diagonals are the same. Tetris matrices are nice because they have lots of very nice properties which can be can be made use of in the future during map making. So we are getting back to this equation, and now those extra pixels which are here and here are not only offsets and chopper, but also one extra pixel which is called gap pixel, and all time samples which correspond to the gaps are now thought of as measuring the temperature in some fictitious extra pixel we call gap pixel. So there's one more degree of freedom which we add to our problem, which is completely irrelevant in terms of the compromising the final noise of the map, because we have many, many pixels usually, so one more degree of freedom doesn't matter. Once we do the map, we cut out extra pixels, which formally corresponds to marginalizations I mentioned, if the noise in the time stream is Gaussian. So what's the... We played around with that. So we have, for every chunk, we have a different set of chopper pixels, of this extra pixels. We divide the chopper we also assign many independent sets to one chunk, just in case to check stationarity of that. And we know it's pretty stationary. The chopper contribution we recover during map making differs from photometer to photometer. But for the given photometer, the adjacent chunks, they show very similar chopper contribution. So the stationarity is not only within the given chunk, but also between chunks. So we think that we are on the safe side here. It depends on the photometer. For those four we use, it's less usually than CMB signal we see in the final map. And we checked our method. I will just talk about that, how efficient this our method is, or recovering those chopper removing this chopper contribution. And it happens that for the maxima kind of strategy, the chopper is basically somehow orthogonal to the CMB map, and we can remove it very well. So even if we add, say, we usually add 20 chopper extra pixels per chunk, we have, at the end of the day, we use 14 chunks, which is 700 extra pixels. For the final map, 500 map is just, you know, 1/16 of all pixels, and the increase of the error bar of final CS is just negligible. And so we can account on that, and so that's an answer. Yes, yeah, yeah. So that was the answer. What, sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah, the only problem with that is time issue. I didn't say that it's impossible. You don't know yet which method we use for mapmaking, though. And some of our methods, of course, require tablet's character of the noise correlation matrix. The method which followed your method published in TEGMAT 97, indeed, the gaps, you are right, can be incorporated in this formalism. But then we found that the all speed up we get by using circulant matrix is gone. We basically waste so much time accounting for gaps that there is no point to use circulant, and we can use other methods, which I will briefly describe in a second. Yes. We have not that many time samples in the gaps. We widen gaps whenever we pre-widen. Okay. So we try to be very careful about what's happening whenever you filter your time stream. I mean, for noise estimation purposes. And then the content from the gaps gets spread around. So you want to be careful that you don't do any mistake here. So that's why we widen gaps just for that purpose. And that increased the number of time samples. In fact, that, you know, the extra events which you saw, I mean, there were not that many, these 5 sigma events which we could see all around, sticking out from the time stream. So the number of gaps is not that big in the original time stream. And so this is how the estimated noise from one of our chunks looks. This is a power spectrum of the noise. The blue curve is just a Fourier transform of the chunk, of the part of the time stream which does not contain any gaps, so we can do that in damp way. And our two estimates of the noise are shown here with the black and red curve. We see this rise. This is because we deconvolved electronic filters from this power spectrum, so we sort of see the 1 over F kind of behavior here. We see the flat plateau here, and we see the rise because of the electronic filters. Those limits here show this is the part of the spectrum which we really use in the analysis. We marginalize formally over frequencies below 0.1 Hz and above 30 Hz. And the reason why we do that are different for both ends. So from this point of view, there is a problem with the sampling variance. We don't have many estimates of the frequencies, amplitudes of the frequency modes below 0.1. So there is a big freedom in the determination of the shape of the power spectrum there. And from the high frequency, there is no much point to keep this high frequency noise up to here. And so we decided to cut it out. Usual procedure is to apply the real filter which will suppress this part of the spectrum, which balances the amplitude of the complex electronic filters. We don't do that, just hoping that if there is some amplitude below roll-off of the electronic filters, we can there is some signal beyond the roll-off of the electronic filters, we still can recover something. I mean, we can try to recover as much as we can. Above 30 Hz, there is no much point to try to do that anymore, and the presence of the very high, you see that amplitude is going up very rapidly here, so the keeping in the analysis numbers which are so different as the one near the plateau and the one here is not very helpful from the point of view of numerical errors. So as I said, we apply this, so this is the byproduct of this simultaneous noise, and not byproduct, the important product of the simultaneous noise and gap filling procedure. Once we have that, we can basically do the map, and we just apply those formulae here, and then one can ask oneself the question, why we really believe that our chopper method can work and how well it can work. And the problem is, of course, important. I mean, this method basically works all the time. However, sometimes this matrix this matrix may become singular simply when you cannot distinguish between two different components. So if we could not distinguish between the chopper signal and the CMD signal, then of course the error bars in the final analysis would increase tremendously. That does not happen to maxima, and the reason for that is just this the maxima scanning strategy as and maxima instrument as mentioned by Adrian. So we know we have those we have multiple double modulation on the board of maxima. So what we see here is just a CMB sky. This is a noise visualization of CMB sky, which was observed like with maxima like experiment. And this curve here is what we get. And on top of that, there is the Fourier transform, the power of the Fourier transform of the triangular chop of the primary mirror. So you see that basically the CMB lives in the frequencies different than are affected by the that are affected by the chopper signal. That basically makes our chopper contribution orthogonal to CMB, and that our chopper extra pixel chopper method works very well in subtracting the contribution from the CMB map. So at the end of the day, we really don't see any significant increase of the error bars caused by the subtraction or removing chopper synchronous noise from our map. So once we have map and we believe that our method should work well, we have to make choice about this matrix M, which I didn't comment yet about. So in this expression, matrix M is sort of a free choice, and depending on how optimal in some sense you want to be, you can make different choices. The remaining matrices are sort of defined before. This is our noise correlation matrix, and those are pointing matrices, those generalized pointing matrices. So the question is, what's the best choice? And that there are a number of choices proposed in the past, and there is we get something which is called minimum variance map if we decide that matrix NTT prime is just an inverse of the total noise correlation matrix. The choice which just Max advocated and he advocates in his paper, which is the one where you choose only so-called circulant part of the noise correlation matrix. The advantage of that is that it's very fast because the inversion is done using Fourier transforms. However, and the idea is that although it's not perfectly optimal, it's not minimum variance, it's fast enough and almost optimal that should work very well. The simplest choice, and this is the most intuitive choice, is the one where we are using, this matrix is just a Kronecker delta, and that corresponds to the bean map. We tried three methods, although it may seem ridiculous trying for maxima data with the correlated noise, this third choice where we have Kronecker's delta. However, we developed a simple, quick and dirty method based on very aggressive filtering of the time stream, which basically brought the time stream back to the realm of uncorrelated noise. And although it was very, very aggressive, we found that the major features of the maps can be usually recovered. So we sort of think that this is a confirmation of the fact how robust CMB signal is in our data. Even this very simple and very, very dirty method works. We, of course, know that whenever you try to compute power spectrum of such a map, you see what aggressive filtering does, and we see that we are losing power on both ends, at the low L part and at the high L part. However, still, it's quite convincing, and for those who like simple methods, even if not perfect, that used to work very nice. In the future, I will just discuss two methods. We implemented both and in number of variants, so I'm just trying to tell you how much redundancy we had in our analysis. So map-making choices we discussed were two, or three, really. Which one is, the first one is the exact and optimal, and for that one you really need Teplitz character of the noise correlation matrix. It's actually possible, and for maxima, we managed to invert noise correlation matrix on the workstation, which is desktop in my office, and it's 200 megahertz SUN 20 or SUN 10 with 2 gigs memory, and it takes just a couple of hours. So it's still possible. It's an exact solution. It's an exact inversion. It's based on the algorithms which are described in book by Golub and Van Loan. So it's possible. There is also a hint in many publications concerning Teplitz matrices that in principle n log n squared is possible. Although any attempt of people I know and myself to implement that in the stable way, numerically stable way, failed. So n squared is the best we can do at the moment. However, it's for maxima, it still works. So we implemented Max's method, where we use this circulant approximation to this matrix M, and this method, we use that method for most of our systematic tests, and the method which is implemented in MATCAP is based on aiming to be optimal, so it's aiming to be a good approximation to the minimum variance solution for a map, but it's approximation. So the approximation here, this thing here is not really an inverse, but an inverse approximating the way as described here. So first you take a circulant part of the noise correlation matrix, you invert that using FFTs, and then you cut the outer parts of the corners, corners of the matrix. So of course, having the exact solution, we can try to compare both matrices, compare the inverse, exact inverse of the noise correlation matrix with this approximation, and it looks okay. However, it's obvious that it cannot be good because the inverse of the noise correlation matrix is not a Teplitz matrix. However, in this construction, it's by construction Teplitz matrix. However, the power of this method is that, although, I mean, the subtle point is not to find good, perfect approximation to the inverse of the noise correlation matrix, but rather method which will recover correct CLs. And from that point of view, we tested results, I mean, we tested power spectra of the maps we recovered with three different methods and found very good agreement. So we ended up finally with maps. Those are computed for three, for separate, those particular one for separate channels, for separate photometers. The printer is very bad. It's a sort of new high quality printer in astronomy department. I'm sorry for that, but you can see the correlation. That one is very much noisier than that one. You see correlation, however, you see the same structure repeating in both maps. This is this 150 gigahertz channel, and this is 240. And again, we build those maps in two different ways. One can apply the global approach, which is implemented by Julian Boril in MATCAP, when you create entire map of the patch at once, or you may try to do single maps of each of the chunks separately and then combine them together. The other method was implemented by us on the workstation, and it just for that reason we don't deal with the full map all the time. That's just memory issues. So we have maps, and now we have our data analysis time stream, and we would like to convince ourselves that it makes sense. So we estimate noise properly on the very early stages of the data analysis. Then we do some operations in the time stream. We estimate, we implement our algebra in map making codes. They sort of agree, so we should be happy. But we would like to find out some consistency tests, which tell us that nothing goes wrong there. We applied then our map making methods to dark channel. And dark channel supposedly doesn't possess any signal, and so it should be pure noise map. We can try to histogram. We have around many thousands pixels in 10 arcminutes map. We have around 4,000 pixels in eight arcminute map with pixel size eight arcminutes. We have around 6,000 pixels. We can try to histogram those pixels and try to figure out if they really follow, for example, Gaussian distribution, or what kind of distribution they follow. The problem is that we have correlations in the map, so this test doesn't fare very well. So the better test is to first decorrelate our map. So if our map is M and noise for this map computed during our map making methods is given by N, we can decompose using Chalesky decomposition, and we can define a new variable X this way. The new variable X, first of all, if noise is correctly estimated at the very early stages of our data analysis, then variable X should be uncorrelated. If not, additionally noise, in that case map, because we are talking about dark channel, is Gaussian, then also variable X should have a variance 1. It's an independent, model-independent statement. We don't have to worry about cosmology or anything else. We can correlate decorrelate maps, we can histogram that, them, and we can compare with Gaussian with RMS1. And this is what we get. So the right panels are without decorrelation. We just histogram the temperature, the pixel temperatures, and this is what we get. The curve, which is here, it's a Gaussian with the best fit RMS, which in this case is 185. And you see that we really don't reproduce this simple way. We really don't reproduce Gaussian distribution. In particular, we do see those high tails, which I show you in the case of histogramming our time stream. And the reason for them is exactly the same. We have lots of positive correlations between pixels in our map. However, when we decorrelate that map, we are getting this histogram on the left, and now the thick, smooth curve is not anymore a fit, but just a third card prediction. It's a Gaussian with variance 1. So you see that going up to 4 sigma left in tails on both sides, and also around the peak, we look quite good. Of course, we can ask the question does it agree with the Gaussian and water level, and we use Kolmogorov-Smirnov test, and it seems that we are doing better than at least happens in 10% cases. So it's a statistically good agreement with the Gaussian. We can do that with the difference maps exactly the same way if we assume that the signal in both maps, as we hope is, in the maps of two different photometers, if the signal is identical, sky signal, then after subtracting them, what we are left is a pure noise map, and we can apply the same procedure to this pure noise map. However, to estimate noise of this difference map, we have to make an extra assumption, and this is about the lack of correlations between maps. So this test not only tests the Gaussianity, the fact if we correctly estimated noise for our time stream, but also tests if maps are both uncorrelated. And this is the problem of the test. It's not a test which is a diagnostic. It doesn't provide you with the clear idea what was wrong if the map fails this test. However, it can give, it's a consistency test which can make you feel good if you pass it. And again, if all of those conditions are fulfilled, then the Gaussian, and the noise is Gaussian, then we know that X has a variance 1. So we look at the time stream once again, at the map once again, and we do the same game. So the right-hand side is before decorrelating, the left-hand side is after decorrelating. And again, in this case, we are agreeing using Kolmogorov-Smirnov test with the with the Gaussian distribution on the level 30, higher than 30%. So it looks quite good. Again, we can go even farther, and that's maybe getting a bit boring, but that last figure is the one I really like. So these are the pairs of difference maps. So this time we have two pairs of difference maps. They are, both of them are pure noise. So we are computing noise for each of the pairs by assuming that they are not correlated. So it's a simple summing. And we again perform just histogram now in two dimensions. And again, if those assumptions are fulfilled, then X is uncorrelated. If in addition noise is really Gaussian, then we should have that this variable, new variable X, or there are two variables this time, they both should have a variance 1 as being completely uncorrelated. So we plot those two-dimensional likelihoods, and the results look like that. So again, now left panel is before correlation, and the right panel decorrelation, and the right panel is after correlation, and you see the 3 sigma contour levels. So it seems like we reproduce theoretical prediction here. Again, it's not a fit, it's not a Gaussian fit, it's a theoretical prediction quite well. Of course, we may compute the best fit Gaussian to all those figures I showed you, and we usually get the best RMS, not 1, but slightly higher than 1, of the order of 3 up to 6%. So we sort of think that this is kind of uncertainty which is involved, or error which is involved in all those procedures. So knowing that there is no correlation between maps, that there is no correlations between maps, you can try to combine them and finally achieve the map, get the map as shown by me initially. On the way, we can compare different combinations, and part of that was done by Adrian. Those are different a bit comparison. So this is the 5-arcminute map made of the using 4 channels. It's not Wiener smooth, so you see pixels, there are 5-arcminute pixels, and this is the 1-channel map only with 8 arcminutes for technical reasons. Nevertheless, and modulo printer quality, you see that we even in one single channel, we can see the basic features we can see in our final map. We can do that for other channels as well, and the agreement is usually quite good. That was our 150 map, gigahertz channel map. Those were shown by Adrian. That also. He showed everything. So let me conclude then. So I'm sorry, I hope that the talk was not only of the historical importance, how we were suffering during data analysis and how many methods we developed to convince ourselves that the results we are getting has some sense. From me personally, that was an important experience. So from that general perspective, I learned that only some of the data analysis methods which works for simulations, they also work for the real data. And that actually goes with some kind of Murphy's law, where method is more sophisticated and intellectually thrilling, then it's more likely not to work, unfortunately. However, despite all those problems, we developed and tested a suite of methods and numerical codes which are capable of dealing with data, with CMP data sets of the new generation as complex as that of Maxima. And from the Maxima perspective, I hope I provide you with the, in this a bit chaotic way, I managed to convince you that what I wrote here is sort of true, so that we really tested our tools and we duplicated many of them. So most of the data of vital stages of data analysis were duplicated by us, and not only duplicated, but we had many, many versions. We thoroughly investigated and selected data we use for the production of the final results, and those are discussed by Adrian, and they will be, as far as cosmology goes, discussed by Andrew probably soon. So that's all. Max? Maybe, we were not surprised by that, maybe because we were testing for that much earlier during data analysis. And we were, as I was trying to answer, we were not only using the fixed number of extra pixels per chunk, but also were assigning for different parts of the chunk different sets of pixels, just to make sure that we are recovering within errors, of course, within noise, which exists. We are recovering the same, and we do recover the same. So we think that stationarity is actually well fulfilled. Also, as I said, between different full chunks of our data set, we see that this chopper synchronous noise is very stable. So we don't see any big differences.
Maybe it could be updated, I don't know. the atmosphere is bigger at the low L's of the dipole. And even there, it becomes small on the scale of the dipole. If you go into RL range, it doesn't seem to be a important.
So probably everybody in Maxima team has different problems to worry about on the top of the list. So,